Well, welcome on in to our streaming show today, News for Utah Plus app users. We are glad you're here. We're glad you're with us. Joining me today, Aaron Ryder and Taylor Morgan. I'll let you both introduce yourselves.
Great. I am a local attorney here in town and most recently was a Republican nominee for Salt Lake County Mayor.
But you have a new job now. Can we disclose that?
Nope.
No?
No.
Why?
Because it's not public.
Oh. I thought you've been hired.
So mysterious.
I have. Wow. Okay. I have, but it's not public.
Oh, sorry. Okay, well, scratch that. Rewind.
So, but I'm still an attorney.
Okay.
That hasn't changed.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk about it later.
I don't know that I want to talk about my job either.
What do you do, Taylor?
I'm a partner at a local consulting firm. We do politics, campaigns, lobbying, marketing, all that kind of fun stuff. I'm an amateur lacrosse coach dad, a baseball coach dad, and in the thick of an all-star Little League baseball tournament right now. It's taking up a lot of my emotional energy.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. And an HOA president.
Yes. And I can't say I think what
close.
I was just about to say. Unwittingly became an HOA president, and it is going okay.
So far as I know. Everyone who lives in Taylor's neighborhood, that's where you voice your complaints about your lawn and your yard signs and your neighbor's dog.
That's right.
Taylor, I think we pepper in one more new title each time we introduce you on the show here.
I think it's great. Yeah,
I know, it's fantastic. I feel like I need to be a lot more creative with my introductions
because
that was very...
Get thinking here, folks.
There's a lot.
No, because last week the HOA president was new. I didn't know you coached lacrosse. I played lacrosse.
Well, not officially. I did say amateur dad.
I see.
He's a dad who thinks he should be
a coach. In a supporting role, Peter, and I almost got kicked out of a Little League game last night. So,
surprise.
Did you argue with a ref?
Listen, there was some terrible officiating.
Oh my God. Don't be that
dad.
Listen, this umpire was older, college age, and made some, let's just say, bad calls. That's all.
Older college age.
But that is
the reason. Wasn't picking on a high school kid, okay?
Okay, but that's the reason we have problems with youth sports right now is because dads like you get up in the faces of the ump.
I usually don't, but last night called for it. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, we'll look at the replay and we will judge whether that should have been a thing. But I hear you. It's a bummer. All right, topics today we are going to hit. Obviously, the public land sale is a big talker this week, both here and nationally. This is a Mike Lee-led push that is going to sell some or hopes to sell some federal lands in Utah and then in 10 other states across the West. We will hit... the bigger piece of that proposal, which is the budget bill, that he's trying to get it in the big budget bill. So we'll talk about where that stands. Our governor, Spencer Cox, was appointed chair of the Western Governors Association. We'll talk about what that means. He's also got some new approval poll ratings, so we'll hit on that. And then if we have time, we'll get to the New York mayoral primary and kind of the themes coming out of that race. So let us start with the public land sale. Obviously, this has raised a lot of consternation among a lot of different groups, and it doesn't seem to fall along party lines either. Mostly because public lands, there are many, I would say, who are in the Republican camp who seem to think, like hunters, fishers, anglers, right? These are people who tend to vote on the Republican side, but now some of their lands are being threatened, so they're opposed to this version, right? So we're not seeing this fall neatly along political lines. But Mike Lee is really facing an uphill battle, not only with these groups of people, but also with the rules in the Senate and trying to get this thing in the reconciliation bill. So, Taylor, has Mike Lee lost the messaging on this? Isn't there a rule in politics if you're explaining you're losing?
Yeah. I think that's the case. I really like some elements of what Senator Lee is trying to do here. My concern is that I wish we were having this conversation about public lands in Utah, federally owned public lands, outside of the budget bill.
Yeah.
Anytime you have the Senate parliamentarian involved in deciding what can go forward in legislation, you know what you're doing is a bad idea. Here in Utah, we are facing a housing crisis, especially in southwestern Utah, in more rural Utah. There are millions of acres of federally owned public land that could and should be opened up for housing, for development within these existing city limits. We really need to look at doing that. We need to have that conversation, and that conversation should be happening outside of the big, beautiful bill discussion.
Yeah, I think that's the key point, because how you talk about this, how you have this conversation is really what matters. I mean, most people, I think, in Utah recognize that when 2/3 of our state is federally owned, that's going to make growth very difficult in Utah over the long term. But I think some of this feels kind of haphazard, if I'm being honest. The quantity of land that was initially proposed, mm-hmm. I know that Senator Lee has pulled back on that, but it was just sort of like it hit everybody all of a sudden, and people were saying, wait a minute, where is this going? How is this land going to be developed? Who gets to buy this? Who gets to develop it? Those conversations actually are an interesting tension in Utah right now. We need housing, we need development, but who develops and how they develop is also something that people are really concerned about.
Yeah, and I think the issue here is the bill, the new version of the bill that you mentioned, it takes out all Forest Service lands, mm-hmm. okay? So that was in the original version, not in the new version. And then it limits the BLM lands to within 5 miles of the border of a population center. People are still taking issue with that piece because that's, you know, that...
How do you that define that?
Yeah, the population of Salt Lake City, 5 miles east, covers all of the Wasatch Front, mm-hmm. right? So people are still taking issue with that definition.
Let's just start with the 2.5 million acres within existing city limits. Mm. I mean, that seems like an obvious place to start, right?
But I think the definition that it put in the bill, some are taking issue with the vague language of it because it doesn't, to your point, get at the specific tracts of land that are within those city mm-hmm. limits. It opens up sort of this broad definition that could be applied to a lot of different places.
Yeah.
So to your point, if there was a more targeted approach and maybe outside of the budget bill, maybe there would be less consternation about it.
Yeah, I just think it's messy and it's not mm-hmm. the right way to go about it. This mm-hmm. budget bill is not the right vehicle if you're serious about opening up these federal lands in Utah. This is something that we should do. We should look at doing this. We should let local municipalities, you know, make these decisions, right?
But we need to be smart about it.
We need to be smart about it. And I think all of us as Utahns, even the most conservative Republican here in Utah would agree that there are areas and lands that we should protect, that shouldn't be developed even for housing. Yet, if we're having the conversation inside the big, beautiful bill, and we're trying to do this as a way to offset the cost, the enormous cost of this bill, mm-hmm. it's just the wrong time, place, and way.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you guys seem to agree on that. But part of the issue here is we are waiting, and probably as soon as we publish this episode, things will change, but we are waiting to hear from the parliamentarian on whether this is allowed to be in the big, beautiful bill. So-called bird rule.
Not so beautiful.
It's
right?
not. It's
I don't think anyone thinks this is a beautiful bill.
It's a sweet spirit bill. Okay.
Ooh.
It's beautiful in its own way.
Complicated. Very complicated.
There's just nothing beautiful about it.
It's a sweet spirit bill. It's right now facing the parliamentarians' judgment rule, if you will, on whether it is a budgetary measure, right? And so it's hard to kind of know. We have seen the new text of the new version, but know how the second version would meet the bird rule. If the first version didn't, it's kind of hard to understand how it's any different because it kind of in theory does the same thing, but, you know, it does reduce some of the land. So how does this pass bird? If you guys were advising Senator Lee here.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's the tricky thing, right? Like you said, I don't see that there's been a whole lot of change in this latest proposal that would get you past the bird rule, because the whole point, you know, it's a new policy, right? And that's the problem with the bird rule, is that we're only supposed to be looking at budgetary issues. And if this were just a purely monetary thing, that would be one thing. But we're talking about the way that these lands can be sold. The whole process around this is different. And that hasn't really seemed to change. So I don't know how this passes bird.
I like the fact that Senator Lee has kicked off this conversation. I hope that he hasn't hijacked it or derailed it. We know that Congresswoman Malloy had been working on this previously, as had then Congressman Curtis. So I hope that this pushes the conversation forward in a way. If it doesn't happen, and I don't believe it should happen as part of the budget bill, I would love this conversation to move forward, because it's something we need to do here in Utah.
Is this something that they can tackle individually? Because, again, this is a piece that covers 11 Western states. Do they just put it in their own piece of legislation? Like, how do they move forward if this doesn't go in here?
Absolutely. It shouldn't be about finding a way to fund the big, beautiful bill, right? Which is the entire reason Senator Lee inserted this, right? Mm-hmm. To sell these public lands as a way to offset the cost of this insanely expensive bill, right? Yeah. That is the wrong way to go about it.
Yep.
Because the focus shouldn't be on the proceeds from the sale of federal lands, the focus should be on what we do with those federal lands, how and where. And I think that is the conversation that I would like to see had in the Senate going forward.
Producer Peter, to Taylor's point there, there's also a piece in the public land sell-off about oil and gas leases, right? Do you know that off the top of your head?
Oh, yeah. I'm not as deep in that because that gets very complicated in my understanding because it mostly impacts Alaska. But yeah, I think if I were to give my two cents on part of this here is I mentioned this on our last episode as well. We've spoken with some groups who've spoken with the senator's office about, you know, assurances they would like in this bill. These are outdoor recreation focused groups. And their concern, right, was that none of the assurances that they want to get this done in the way they'd like to see are going to make it past the parliamentarian. So I think there is a growing sense that if this is going to happen, it's going to have to happen in another form. I know on the campaign trail, right, John Curtis was very proud of the Emery County Land Exchange back in like 2018, a little bit of a more granular state by state approach. I'm also curious to see what the HUD and the Department of the Interior have a memorandum of understanding to start working on this kind of program. I'd expected Interior Secretary Doug Burgum to be a little more vocal at this point in the game, to be honest.
Well, and to your point of this should be targeted, I mean, to create a policy that works for all 11 Western states, Alaska's needs are very different than Utah's
Absolutely.
Needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to create a broad definition that applies the same way to all the lands in 11 different states. Yeah. That's tough to do.
And you're, you know, again, when you put it in the one big, beautiful bill, you lose a lot of control over how this goes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big concern, too, because public lands in Utah is a massive issue, has been for a long time. There are a lot of people who would really like to come to the table and have this conversation, but so much of that gets drowned out in the larger context of the big, beautiful bill, and you just hand over all control over that. And I think a lot of people are really nervous about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the big, beautiful bill in general a little bit. We know there's been some issues with some pieces of Medicaid and the way that states were trying, or the federal government was trying to raise money from Medicaid, or at least put some of the burden back on states. But Medicaid, different work requirements and stuff is still in the big, beautiful bill. But where do you guys see this going just in general, the bill itself with all its provisions?
Oh, we're looking at me.
Well,
I see.
I don't know.
I'll tell you, this bill has been hijacked by anyone and everyone. And in the Senate, we know this narrowly passed the House with the tightest of margins. Mm-hmm. We expected the Senate to make changes and tweak the big, beautiful bill, not so beautiful anymore, still very big.
The big, sweet spirit bill.
I don't know that we expected the Senate to try to insert everything into the big, beautiful bill. It's become so messy. Again, we have the Senate parliamentarian involved deciding what can and what cannot be included in this. It's just a hot mess right now. And I hope...
You don't think it passes?
No, I still think it passes, Aaron. And I know you're referring to a previous conversation we had as, you know, guest experts on a radio program recently. And I think on that show, you said it would not pass the Senate.
I did not
and
say
I
that.
And I said it still
that.
Will likely pass the Senate.
No, I said it probably will,
Peter,
but it will face
Peter
some
will
challenges.
Task you with fact-checking.
It will face
we're
going to
have to
research
find
fact check.
There's a tape of this, so we will find it.
I think we will work through the mess, and ultimately a version of it will pass the Senate. Now the question is, will the House then concur with those changes?
Because the main goal is to keep the tax cuts in place.
Yes.
And
yeah.
that's important for Americans who are paying less in taxes right now. And if this doesn't pass, then we pay more in taxes, right? Mm-hmm. So there is some incentive to keep that in place. The question is, how do you raise the rest of the money?
Well, and the other component to this is that Donald Trump has not been as proactive about this as he could be and probably will be.
That's a good
will
point,
become
yeah.
over the next few days.
He's been very passive.
He has been very passive, but he has a self-imposed deadline of July 4th when he wants this thing signed. Now, for that to happen, the Senate has to finish what they're doing. Then it has to go back to the House. The House has to look at everything that the Senate just did, come to some sort of agreement, and then send it off to be signed. I don't know that that happens by July 4th. I think that is reaching. Even J.D. Vance said he didn't think it was going to happen by July 4th. But this is Trump's thing. This is his agenda. This is everything that he is out there for, and he wants a victory on this. And so even if it is a super watered down version, or if it's super messy and complicated and a terrible, terrible bill, which it seems that most people think it's a terrible, terrible bill, something's going to pass because Donald Trump just won't accept anything less.
If I could add one other thing in, I know I want to say Politico was reporting this week that Mike Johnson has already told congressional Republicans, like, listen, I know we said we want to have this done by July 4th, but you might need a plan to be in town another week, 2 weeks, because this could get really messy. I want to flag another possible fly in the ointment here, which is that the AI provisions, the moratorium on state AI regulation, are still in the bill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've had already several Republicans come out and say they're not going to vote for it when this is in there. And it only passed by one vote.
And those are House Republicans who voted initially and are now saying they won't vote for those provisions.
And
again.
I think the votes are sketchy on the Senate side with Republicans, too, because of public lands, too.
Yeah.
You've got Zinke, who's against it, right? And a couple other Western states who are not quite on board yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not happening.
And then you throw all the Medicaid stuff on top of that, and you're going to have a big, big fight.
Yeah.
I think we can plan to see really major edits is, I think, the main takeaway. But I think we do all agree it's probably going to pass in some form.
My favorite kind of soap opera, someone texted when I was discussing this with someone offline, I said, this is my favorite kind of soap opera, to just sit back and watch how this thing all gets messy. I need a life, apparently.
You're so nerdy.
I know.
This is not interesting at all.
Yeah. Wow.
What is interesting to you, Taylor? Please enlighten us.
Well, I would maybe say Governor Cox's new approval rating.
Okay.
That seemed to be really interesting. And hold on, I make that segue.
It's funny you should mention that.
As someone on this show who's been critical of Governor Spencer Cox recently in the past.
You have been.
Turns out I was wrong. Maybe.
Really?
I don't know.
What?
How so? Because you were critical of the flag bill and him not signing the flag bill. Now his approval ratings are coming out and saying 52% of Utahns still approve of him, but he's lost some support among Democrats. I would wager a guess that that issue is probably one for those Democrats, right, who see him kind of sitting the fence or going more right than they thought. They thought he was more of a moderate, and him kind of tailoring to the conservative and or Trump faction of the party. But where do you think you were wrong?
Well, I think my criticism of Governor Cox was around, at least in my opinion, I saw him playing it safe rather than leading and stepping out and maybe taking some political risk by being a bold leader. I think I called him caffeine free Spencer Cox. And, you know, that has not been received very well. I apologize.
Oh,
that's
so
apparently that is
not a thing.
That is a very offensive thing to call someone here in Utah.
And now we have it on record.
I apologize for that. I think I was looking for a little more boldness from Governor Cox. And in my eyes, he sat back and maybe played it safe. And I was a little bit critical of that. I would have liked to have seen him veto the flag bill, perhaps, or force the negotiation during the session by threatening a veto. Mm-hmm. And he did not do either. He stood back.
So, and then he said they were all dumb flags.
But
and
then
dumb
he
laws.
Called them. Yeah. He called Salt Lake City's kind of loophole flags. Mm-hmm. He called them dumb flags, and he called the bill a dumb bill. And it turns out his approval ratings are okay, slightly up. So I was wrong. He was right, and I own it.
Okay.
I mean, I think you've seen an interesting evolution of Governor Cox, where in his first term, he was more bold like that, right? Like, he came out, there were some things that he took some risks on early on. And I think maybe that's where you saw Democrats saying, oh, hey, wait a minute, maybe this is our guy. You know, he's more moderate. But the thing is, Spencer Cox is a conservative.
He's always been a conservative, but he always had a way of kind of bridging that gap a little bit.
And so now in the second term, he has pulled back from those risks a little bit. So I think where you saw those Democrats stepping up and supporting him in his first term, some of them are now saying, oh, well, wait a minute, you're just a conservative, and I thought you were something different. And it turns out you're just exactly who you said you were, but I thought you were going to give me something more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I still think that I still think he does a pretty good job with the bridge building, and he's out there and he's trying to make inroads there, but he is just not taking as many risks.
Interesting. What do you guys make of a 49% approval rating, according to this polling from the Deseret News, of the legislature? Is 49% good? Is it, like, what does that number mean in your mind?
I think it's very similar to how Utah voters and American voters rate Congress. Congress always has a low approval rating in general, but if you then ask voters about their individual member of Congress, the approval ratings are much higher. I think it's similar with our legislature. Recent polling has shown that Utah voters want Republicans in charge of the legislature. They're happy with the Republican Party having a supermajority in the legislature. But yet, if you ask them in general about the legislature, they have some concerns. I think a lot of this is on the heels of the legislature's overstepping last year on Amendments A and Amendments D.
Yeah.
And I know this might be a little bit in the weeds. We don't need to explain what those are again. But long story short,
politicos know what they are.
The legislature, Utah voters have a general sense, a perception that the Utah legislature has gotten a little too cute and maybe overstepped the bounds of their power a little bit. Mm. And this goes back
with judiciary.
Yeah, sorry. Exactly. Yeah. This goes back to Governor Cox, I think. This is what I had concerns about. Governor Cox, I think, has an opportunity to step into and lead vis-a-vis the legislature. And I think Utah voters would support him more if he were to do that.
Well, between him and the courts, they're the only ones who can.
That's right.
And right now we're seeing that check fall to the courts, right? Yeah. Where we're seeing a lot of rulings come out against the legislature in lieu of Governor Cox stepping out and maybe putting his foot down in certain instances, even if he gets overridden in the long run.
But the Republican supermajority in the Utah legislature is safe. Voters also like that. They want Republicans in charge of the legislature.
So Utah's not purple in any way?
Absolutely not.
No. Okay. No. There's some who fear that it is. All right. Just checking. Governor Cox was also appointed as the chair of the Western Governors Association. That is a group of 22 Western states that focus on Western needs and priorities. He said that he will focus on basically energy abundance and creating energy and unlocking energy and fixing and figuring out creating more energy. What kind of accolade is that? We know he was the chair of the National Governors Association for a year, which was where the Disagree Better campaign came from. What does this appointment mean?
I mean, I think sometimes with these things, you know, not that I'm trying to discredit this at all, but sometimes they rotate leaders and everybody takes a turn. But I also think that it is indicative of the fact that other governors like Governor Cox, and they look to him as someone who has interesting ideas and who's, you know, Utah is a clear leader in the nation when it comes to policy, when it comes to quality of life and other things. So the governor of a state like that would have some, I think, you know, accolade in the room to stand up and to have maybe a stronger voice than another state. Mm.
Yeah. Agreed. I'm just trying to decide who I like better on the ticket with Governor Spencer Cox in 2028 for the White House.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey or Nikki Haley?
Oh.
What is the more compelling combination?
Nikki Haley has good foreign policy experience, but Matthew McConaughey is just well-liked and has good name ID.
Yeah. That's true. Something to think about.
Interesting. Yeah. We'll have to watch and see if the Cox-McConaughey ticket...
Is it Cox McConaughey or McConaughey Cox?
Yeah, that's the question. I think that's the bigger question.
McConaughey Cox.
Who's in what spot?
Okay, we shall see how that goes down. All right, want your guys' thoughts on, we're going to take ourselves outside of Utah a little bit, kind of talk national politics, a race maybe people aren't following too closely, and that is New York City's mayor. Why do we care about New York City's mayor? Well, we don't necessarily, but it's kind of become this bellwether for Democrats and whether the party is moving towards a more like socialist type candidate versus a more establishment type candidate, because the guy who won the primary was seen in that more socialist
camp. A democratic socialist.
Right. Yeah. So talk to me about the bellwether. Do you think it's a bellwether? What do you see coming out of that race?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting time period for the Democratic Party, because if you are a New York Democrat and you have Andrew Cuomo and Zoran Mamdani on the ticket, you're saying, I've seen this show before. I've seen this movie before. I've seen the movie where we take the safe, older Democrat guy who's been around forever, and we put him in office because we're trying to restore what we used to be. And you know what? That movie didn't end very well last time around. So why am I going to go for part two of that same show? And I mean, Andrew Cuomo has some things going for him that Joe Biden didn't, you know, which certainly I think helped him. But Democrats are looking for something new. They're looking for something different. And this guy, can he deliver on the stuff he promised? Absolutely not. But he's trying to deliver something. He's got some sort of message. And where we see Republicans, there's been a populist wave in the Republican Party for many years now under Donald Trump. Well, we're seeing it in the Democratic Party, too. So I think it is an interesting indicator of where, particularly amongst young Democrats, you know, he put a lot of effort into getting not foreigners, but, you know, like what is the word that I'm looking for here? Anyway,
immigrants.
Yeah, immigrants or minority groups. Minorities. That's what I'm looking for to come and participate in this election. And I don't know. I think it's interesting.
I think we shouldn't read too much into the results of this New York City Democratic primary election because it was administered by ranked choice voting.
And that's also interesting.
I think it is actually the death knell for ranked choice voting as a process in the United States, because what it's done is it's radicalized the results of the election. And it is, you know, there's long been criticism about the process of ranked choice voting and how that could facilitate extremist candidates essentially winning later rounds of balloting. Mm. That's what's happened in this primary election. I think ranked choice voting is done in this country as a voting method going forward, especially in more partisan elections, right? Like here in Utah and other states. So I don't want to read too much into the results, right? I don't know that they're representative of the Democratic Party. Perhaps more of a problem with the process.
Okay, interesting. Well, we've hit a lot of topics today and delved in deep, so we appreciate it. Aaron Ryder and Taylor Morgan, thank you both so much for your insights today.
Thank
you. We always appreciate it. Producer Peter, we appreciate you and your non-dressing up today.
Yeah, maybe wear pants.
Well, they can't see.
What you can't see is Peter.
Put on some pants. Come on.
Let the record show I'm wearing some lovely shorts. They match the shirt. They match the shoes.
Do you also live in your parents' basement? Or do you have your own apartment?
No. These days, no. I moved out. Friend's couch.
Excellent.
Friend's couch. We love that for you, Peter. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for being here. Of course, you can always find our Inside Utah Politics show that airs on ABC4 on Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. And then wherever you podcast, just search for Inside Utah Politics and you'll find this episode and many others there as well. And we will see you next time.